Good afternoon. I'm going to open up the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. It's Thursday, March 12th. A first announcement is that the public work sessions on Senate Bill 391 and 596 will be held over until next Tuesday. And what's the date on Tuesday? You know that? March 17th? Is that correct? March 17th. We need some more paperwork, and one of the, as you can see, we have two members missing right now, and one of the members is ill. Senator Boquist won't be here today. He's excused, and he's a co-sponsor for one of those bills and would like to be here. So if there's folks here that, I think there are agency folks that I'd ask to be here, if they could be back on next Tuesday, I'd appreciate that. Next, we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 528. Before I ask my committee staff to give a brief overview of that, I'm just going to go over the procedures for this because we have two full sheets of people that would like to testify, and we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to at least say a few words on these bills. We're going to have some panels that come up of both the proponents and the opponents after we hear from the legislative sponsors of this bill, and then we have a little stopwatch here, so we'll be fair. We're going to give everybody 3 minutes, but that does not mean you have to use all of your 3 minutes, especially if what you'd like to say has already been said. Certainly, if you have written testimony, we're going to ask you to summarize or paraphrase that, not read your testimony. It's much more effective as well because we're able to read that. If you do have written testimony, you can hand that to Natalie, our committee staff, and she'll distribute that to us. And then there's also an overflow room if there's any folks that want to have a little break or still listen to the hearing. It's hearing room A, or if you don't want to stand during the next few hours, you're certainly welcome to sit in hearing room A and listen to that. Comments?
Madam Chair, I wonder if you're going to leave the record open for those who want to give a written testimony would have an opportunity to have it to us by a certain date, since we're not going to be acting on the bill today.
Certainly. We will take written testimony until the close of business next Monday, that's March 16th. So if you were not able to be here and you're listening, or you were not able to get your written comments together and you'd like to submit that, and those do go to Beth Herzog, the committee staff. And Beth, if you'd like to say your email address for those folks listening over the internet.
It's BETH.HERZOG at state.OR.US.
Okay, great. Thank you. Beth, if you'd like to give an overview of the bill, and then we'll invite up our legislative colleagues to come and give their introductory comments.
Senate Bill 528 prohibits field burning in Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas, Marion, Polk, Yamhill, Lynn, Benton, and Lane counties. Authorizes the EQC, after consulting with the Director of Agriculture, to identify species in areas of steep terrain to allow field burning, specifies the allowable amount of steep terrain that the EQC can identify, 12,500 acres in 2009, 6,250 acres in 2010, and none beginning in 2011. And I just also, sorry for the record, is that some people have already submitted emails leading up to the hearing and that those will also be included.
All right. Thank you, Beth. And with that, I will invite the legislative co-sponsors to come up. We'd like to hear from Senator Walker and Representative Colvey. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
To start.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and committee members. For the record, I'm State Representative Paul Colvey from District 8, which takes in Eugene, the Lorain Valley, and the No-Tie area. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this bill and for having a hearing on Senate Bill 528. I've provided you a written testimony, which I won't read, and we'll summarize a few points in the testimony. You know, I brought this bill forward after becoming a legislator. I heard a lot of complaints from constituents basically saying, what's going on with the field burning? I'm being impacted by smoke. My kids are having to go to the doctor. And, you know, I would tell them to call the hotline at the Department of Agriculture or call the Lane Regional Air Pollution Authority. And many of them would respond back, I've been doing that for years, it doesn't do any good. And they told me to contact my legislature. So that prompted me to look into the what was going on with this issue a little bit more. Having been born in the Eugene area, I'm familiar with field burning over time. And certainly I became alarmed at the health impacts that were happening from the people I was hearing from. And I started investigating the health impacts and the data and the studies around smoke and fine particulates, especially being identified in the last 10 years, especially as being a huge health threat. So that prompted me to introduce a bill in 2007, and I, you know, have brought a bill forward again this session. As you know, the governor's also introduced a bill on the House side, which deals with this same issue in a slightly different manner. The real issue here, from my perspective, is health care, and it's the health threat to the public. When we look at smoke, and especially from field burning, you know, it's a something that we try to measure, that DEQ does. And for years, you know, we would look at statistics, and that would show that field burning produces 2% of the particulate matter annually in the Willamette Valley. And that didn't seem like much of a problem. But when you looked a little bit further and started separating out the fine particulates during the field burning season, field burning produced 40% of the fine particulates in the Willamette Valley during that field burning season. And I've provided some information in those packets, the pie charts, that will show that from the that are from the Department of Environmental Quality statistics. You also see a chart of some of the toxics that are also contained in that smoke, and the amount of those toxics that go up in field burning during the field burning season, and also in the four largest days. And those statistics are pretty telling. You know, when you look at 13,000 tons of pollutants going up in the 2006 field burning season, and you look at 770 tons of fine particulate matter going up in that same season, and you know, you start looking at the other toxic elements that go up with for like benzene and acrolein and some of those that those toxics recombine with those fine particulates. You breathe them into your lungs, and your body doesn't have any defense. It doesn't reject. Your lungs can't reject that fine particulate matter. It absorbs into your system, and we have medical people coming up to testify to that, I'm sure. I just wanted to note that, you know, we have a tremendous amount of support from the medical community supporting, you know, this reduction and eliminating field burning. And I'll just mention that we have a few here today to testify as well: the Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Nurses Association, and Peace Health. I don't know if they're actually here, but we have a letter from William Mashofsky, the chief of staff from the Sacred Heart Medical Center, indicating that 700 physicians in their organization support a ban on field burning. And, you know, it just it goes on to with some personal comments from him as well. I think that it warrants pointing out that we have the American Lung Association, the Oregon Lung Specialists, the City of Eugene, Lane County Board of Commissioners, you know, just a whole host of doctors and others that are supporting this bill. There's really, and that's prompted because we've determined there's pretty clear and convincing evidence that short-term exposure, well, both long-term and short-term exposure to fine particulates, have significant adverse human health effects. And one of the issues that we face with field burning in this state is we measure it very site-specific, and we measure it in averages, in annual averages and 24-hour averages. And they're measured at certain nephelometer sites, which usually don't experience or don't measure the full impact of where those most intense episodic events of smoke are happening. And that's really a huge point, you know, when you look at this issue. It is absolutely crucial that you understand the difference between measuring averages and ambient air quality as opposed to the short-term spikes that happen with this practice of field burning when these plumes don't go up into the air as planned. And certainly there's plenty of people who have noted that these field burning plumes don't always go according to theory. The wind patterns change in short periods of times, and sometimes these plumes also create their own little weather patterns and will go sideways or go up and then come back down on particular communities, and really putting people at a lot of risk. You know that there's a quote in here, and I have plenty of documentation on studies. There's one particular study by the Washington State University Department of Crop and Soil Science that states the emission factors of PM2.5 are substantially greater for grass seed burning than for most agricultural burns, wildfires, and forest fires. And I think that's something that we need to take note of. It is just also, I want to point out that some have said, there's no data to prove there's any health impacts. Well, certainly, when you look at the science, and you'll see in your charts, you also see that there is an increased risk, and I'm sure others will speak to the details of it. There are increased risks to pulmonary, cardiac events. For every 10 cubic micrograms of increase in fine particulates. And recently you also see in your charts that there is three episodes in this packet of increases that are much greater than that. One in Eugene, July 10th, 2007. And this was measured at the Nephelometer, downtown Eugene, and the real impact was far from downtown Eugene. The real impact was in this West Eugene area and even towards Vinita, Cheshire, and some of the smaller communities where we have a lot of people living. And so if we have those kind of spikes at those Nephelometer sites, you got to understand that the concentration levels of that smoke in those communities far removed from those Nephelometer sites are dangerous. I mean, they're dangerous even where these Nephelometers are when you have those sorts of spikes. And I think that's evidenced in the studies that we have presented. I also have provided documentation of three deaths caused directly from exposure to field burning smoke. They are in Idaho and Washington in a court affidavit. In two separate court affidavits for two people and also a death certificate from a third person from the state of Idaho as well. And, you know, on the death certificate it says, victim with known asthma subjected to intense air pollution from wheat field burning. And I tried to check into that, but it does appear that it was grass field burning and in that particular case. But that's what the death certificate says. And just to note, even if it was wheat field burning, it's well known that the smoke from grass seed is fields, and the stubble from that, the residue from those fields is much more intense than most any other agricultural crop. You know, I just got to say that one of the points I got to keep making is that people don't breathe averages. You know, they breathe these short-term exposures. It's paramount to understanding this issue, and it's paramount to look at some of the hospitalization data that we've also provided. We do have increased hospitalization during field burning seasons in my particular community, and I think you'll hear others testify to that fact. You know, and I come at this with sympathy for the farmers who are trying to make a living. And, you know, but frankly, we only burn 10% of the fields right now, and it puts up a really disproportionate amount of smoke and fine particulates in the air when you compare it to just about anything else for the time period that they actually burn. So with that, I think you can conclude that my concern is essentially one that's pointed at the Willamette Valley. Senate Bill 528 is addressing certain counties in the Willamette Valley only. And the aim of the bill is really only at the burning of grass seed and cereal grain crop residues. It doesn't impact, according to legislative counsel, it doesn't impact any other kind of burning, the orchards, the Christmas tree farms, the mint fields, and other burning. It's simply on field burning of grass seed and cereal grain crop residues. And certainly I want to just go on for just a few more minutes. There's been some things said that, there's a great concern about the increased use of pesticides. And I just want to make sure you put that into perspective, because when we're talking about the increased use of pesticides, we're talking about 10% of the fields. So it's really very marginal increase in the use of pesticides. If in fact the pesticides is a big issue, and there's concern from the farmers about that increase of pesticides on the 10% of the fields, I don't know if we should be looking at the other 90% too. I don't believe that's the case. I know that the health risk from the field burning smoke and from the fine particulates is much greater than the health risk impacts from the proper application of pesticides on those fields. And so with that, I think I'll close and perhaps let you ask some questions if you have any of me at this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Hulvey. I think we'll have Senator Walker go next, and then if there's questions for either of you, we can ask.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator from District 7, which encompasses Eugene and Junction City, and my constituents have complained about field burning over the years pretty frequently. I have quite a file, and I think I've recycled some of it because I've been in the legislature so long, but I have this one letter to the editor someone wrote in 06 who called the legislature gutless for not acknowledging the problem. And I don't really think we're gutless. I think we just have been trying to search for a solution to this problem, and I think the solution would be in the bill before you today. This is the 40th anniversary of what was Black Tuesday in Oregon, when Governor Tom McCall was in our community, and 315,000 acres of fields were burned that day, and it choked the entire valley. He put a 10-day ban on burning and got all excited about wanting to do something about field burning, and nothing was done until 7 people died and 38 were injured in a 23-car pileup in 1988 that Senator Hass and I spoke about this morning. He was a news reporter during that time. I applaud the farmers for trying to make an effort here to reduce the number of fields. We've told them they had to reduce the number of fields to burn, but we just can't keep up this pace. There's 65,000 acres that are allowed to be burned a year. It doesn't get burned every year, that amount, but they're allowed to burn up to that amount, and it still is choking the citizens of our communities. I think it's time that we do this now. The governor has a bill to phase it out in 3 years, but I don't think we need to wait for 3 years. We've been waiting for 40 years to do something about field burning. So I applaud my colleague to my left here, Representative Hulvey, for putting a lot of time and energy into working on this since he's been in the legislature, and my colleagues at the dais as well, for understanding the problems that it creates for our community.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Are there any questions for our colleagues? I want to thank you both for coming here today and sharing your thoughts. And I know, Representative, you've been working on this for a long time, so this is the first time that we're having a hearing on it this year in this committee, but certainly we look forward to the testimony. And if you'd like to stick around, if there's any questions, be great. I know you have to go off to another meeting.
I do have a committee, and here's my notebook.
Certainly.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you,
Chair Dingfelder, and I just wanted to add that there has been testimony also submitted in the House Health Care Committee this session and last session as well that has other information if the committee so wishes to see that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, next up we have a couple, as I mentioned, we have panels for both the proponents and the opponents, and then we'll start taking names from the list. So first up is Dr. Robert Carolyn. Am I getting that right? Chris O'Neill and John Neumeister. And again, if you have written testimony, if you can hand that off to our committee administrator. Thank you, gentlemen. Just a reminder, and I'll ask everybody to, one, turn off your phones because our sound system picks that up. Second, if you can please identify yourself before you speak. Thank you. Whoever wants to start.
I lost. I'm Dr. Robert Carolyn. I'm a pulmonologist. I've practiced medicine in the Eugene Springfield area for 30 years and 3 weeks. And I represent the Oregon Medical Association, of which I'm a member, and the Lane County Medical Society, of which I'm a member. And also I speak for the American Lung Association, which supports clean air. Madam Chairman.
Thank you.
Committee. Over the last 20 years, a staggering amount of data have accumulated documenting serious health adverse effects from fine particulates. The worst of these particulates are the 2.5 micrograms, the very, very fine particulates, and I'm not going to go into detail. I think you've heard enough probably already about this. But the thing that's important is that just in the last 10 years, researchers have discovered the very alarming fact that these fine particulates contribute to vascular disease. Now, we've known for years that there's been respiratory problems, and although respiration, breathing's my business, I'm not going to talk much about this because I expect you're going to hear it from others. But I want to point out that fine particulates have been proven now to contribute to heart attacks, strokes, heart failure, things that involve a vascular disease. And 20 years ago, nobody knew that. In the Journal of the American Medical Association on March 8, 2006, there was a huge review which compared matched up hospital admissions with fine particulate data from the nephelometers that the EPA has all around the country. This is a huge review. It included all 50 states and included Portland and the Eugene areas in Oregon. And it showed that hospital admissions for respiratory problems, for heart attacks, strokes, and heart failure correlated on a day-to-day basis with increased particulates in the air. So that means that on a day that there was more particulates in the air, there were more hospital admissions for those reasons. Interestingly, there was not any increase in admissions for trauma during those times. That was the control. And this kind of backed up a study that was published in the journal Circulation in 2001, which showed that short exposures, just hours, of fine particulates caused an increase in heart attacks. Just 2 months ago, January 2009, in the New England Journal of Medicine, they published an astounding study which showed that fine particulates in the air, the concentration of fine particulates in the air, is associated with life expectancy. And the way they did that is they took areas where they've improved fine particulates in the air and life expectancy is improved, but of course that alone doesn't make the association. You have to correct for other variables, and you also have to use areas where it hasn't improved and to show that the life expectancy also doesn't improve. They showed that a reduction of 10 micrograms per meter cubed is associated with an increased life expectancy by 6 months. Now, Senator Dingfelder, I'll pick on you. That doesn't mean that if you...
I'm in trouble.
That doesn't mean that if you live in an area where there has 10 micrograms per meter cubed, that you will live 6 months less. What it means that if there's 20 people here, the other 19 might have no effect, and you might die 10 years earlier. I didn't mean to do that personally. That's an example. You understand?
I know. It's hypothetical, we hope.
Okay. Or I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't even discussed the lung problems that people with asthma and emphysema get. I'm sure you'll hear more about this. You all have a handout, a summary of a number of different medical articles that Ms. Maya Khan has put together, and these are very relevant. This is of the hundreds of articles written about fine particulates and the harmful effects. These summarize it as well as anything. And if you have any medical questions, I'd be more than happy to answer it from anybody.
Thank you. Well, why don't we hear from the rest of the panel, and we'll see if there's some questions.
Okay.
Just slide that over. There you go.
Okay. Senators, thank you for the opportunity for talking today. My name is John Neumeister, and I'm a resident of Lane County. Brief introduction, I grew up on a farm in Ohio and have farmed most of my adult life here in Oregon. I've got a degree in animal science from Oregon State University and a degree, a master's in crop science from Oregon State as well. I worked for 3 years in the 90s on pesticide registration, and I also was an employee of Pennington Seed Company for 9 years, during which that time of which I became friends with and worked with many of the gentlemen and ladies in the room here. So for the last 4 years, I've been lucky enough to be able to make a living and that of three other families by producing and direct marketing lamb, mostly to fine restaurants and stores here in Oregon. We sell about 90% of our product within the state of Oregon, and we did it over $500,000 in sales last year. So I should say we are grass farmers, but I should mention that we don't raise seed, and so the outcome of this legislation will not directly affect us economically. I followed this issue for many years, of course, being involved as a farmer and in the seed industry, and I must say the medical data is especially compelling to me now, and I understand that we are harming the health of people. I think we all breathe the same air. We're all citizens in this valley. This is not an urban-rural issue or a farmer versus city folk issue. If people's health is being harmed and we're contributing to that somehow, then I think it needs to be addressed. I wanted to talk a little about the agronomy and economics of grass seed as I understand it. I tried to separate them out, but they're all tied together. It all affects each other. You know, there is some, you know, agronomic justification for burning the identified species, the fine fescues, et cetera, in the Silverton Hills. For other crops, that necessity is I think, open to question. There's basically three strategies for straw disposal, which is really what we're talking about here. One is burning, of course. The second is called clean non-thermal, where it's harvested and then the straw itself is exported. Now, there's a good market for perennial ryegrass and tall fescue straw. Not so much for annual ryegrass, which is over 52% of what was burned last year, but it's not zero. 20,000 tons of annual ryegrass straw was sold in last year that I looked at the data for, which was 2007. The last strategy is full straw load. And I must say, you know, the Oregon State Extension Service, and specifically individuals like Mark Melby, Bill Young, Gail Gingrich, have worked hard over the years to provide grass seed farmers with alternative strategies to burning, and they're very effective. Looking at soil tests from Linn County Farms, a lot of the organic matter levels are under 1%. That comes from years and years of monocropping annual ryegrass and not adding organic matter back to the soils. When it's burned, it all goes away. Plowing organic matter back into the soil increases the microbial activity in that soil and raises and makes the soil lighter and more friable. I remember it was not an uncommon thing for growers.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up because we have about 10 minutes left. We're three more people, so if you can do that, it would be great.
I apologize. I'll tell a brief story. At Pennington Seed, often growers would come by, and often the conversation was about field burning. And one day a gentleman came in, and after the obligatory complaints about the difficulty of it, he said, I did notice one thing. I used to plow this field with a 10-bottom plow, and now with the same tractor, I can pull 12 bottoms. The bottom is the part of the plow that actually cuts the soil. And I thought about that, and I realized that he has got an economic benefit from increased organic matter in his soil. So it's not all it's not a negative a consequence. There's positive benefits of plowing back the organic matter into the soil. I urge you all to vote for the Holvey-Prosinski bill. Thanks.
Thank you. And I just wanted to mention that Dan Galperin and Holly Higgins will be coming up part of this panel. So as soon as you're done, we'll have those other folks come right up.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senators, my name is Chris O'Neill. And today I am a registered nurse. I live in Eugene. And today I'm representing the Oregon Nurses Association, which has 10,000 nurses in 54 facilities, represented in 54 facilities around the state of Oregon. We're here today to support SB 528. I provided a brief description in a one-pager there. I guess all I want to say, since time is important, all I want to say is that while I'm not a pulmonary expert, that's not my area, my specialty area, prevention is. And in a very simple way, you look at prevention in terms of reducing risks and increasing protections in the state. And I think that with the Agriculture Department over the years, a lot of effort has been put in to technological mechanisms to reduce the impact on the population. I believe there's been a good faith effort to do that over the years. Nevertheless, I usually know when fuel burning smoke is drifting into my neighborhood when I get a headache. And I look out to the horizon, and it doesn't take too long before we're making a phone call to the local regional air pollution authority to say we're having an effect here in our neighborhood. And my neighbors, it's the same thing. We don't have pulmonary problems. We're just citizens. We don't have anything debilitating like asthma in a polluted environment. But we suffer the effects knowing that somebody up the valley has followed all the rules and made every attempt to have the smoke go up and not come into the urban area. So even with all the best efforts, nevertheless, the smoke drifts into our city. If the effort is to reduce the hazard and increase the protection, and the technologies that have been applied can't yield better results than they have to date, then I think protection of the public, another part of prevention, protection of the public really falls to the public policy realm. I think it's really in your hands at this point to protect the policy through the law, and in this case we're supporting SB 528 as a reasonable approach to that. And from my perspective living there and my neighbors, the sooner the better. We prefer this approach as opposed to the governor's phase-out because people will suffer from the smoke this year unless we begin to control it with a new public policy. So with it, any questions?
Thank you. Any questions for any of the panelists? All right. Thank you very much. And we have two more coming up, and there's about six minutes left between the two of you, Dan Galperin and Holly Higgins.
Do you know where the chair is up there? Oops.
Dan, why don't you get started? You want to get started?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Dan Galpern, co-director of the Campaign to End Field Burning of the Western Environmental Law Center. In your packets, you'll find our letter, our recent report on the impacts of field burning on air quality in the Willamette Valley, summary of the relevant medical literature, and the list of endorsers of the campaign, many of which Representative Hulvey already mentioned. We support an immediate end to field burning to protect public health. As a matter of pure public policy, it's flatly unacceptable for a small minority of seed growers to gain a marginal economic advantage at the expense of the health of tens of thousands of residents of the Willamette Valley. The medical evidence is clear, as is extensively documented in your packet before you. The relevant state agencies, including the Oregon Department of Agriculture, are unanimous in their view that field burning smoke presents a significant risk to human health. Our report, using an exceptionally conservative methodology, as noted in the report in our letter, makes clear that communities throughout the Willamette Valley are regularly hammered during the burn season with sharp increases in fine particulate pollution at levels of medical concern. But the numbers, of course, only tell part of the story. They don't tell of the mother who is forced to cloister her children inside on a otherwise perfect August afternoon to escape field burning smoke, or of the father who is enraged that his infant daughter has been exposed to this potentially lethal and avoidable pollution. I am one of those fathers. Field burning smoke imposes a substantial burden in terms of increased health care costs to downwind residents that is likely far greater than the marginal benefit to the few burners, as is documented in our letter and materials. It is clear as well from the experience here in Oregon since the phase down of burning, and also in Washington State since their burning ban in 1988, again as documented in your packet, that the health of the grass seed industry simply does not depend on burning. In closing, I want to turn to the claim that's recently been made by the Oregon Seed Council that eliminating burning will force growers to increase their pesticide use and other pollution. First, the argument is essentially data-free, without any accompanying supporting information that, for example, acres burned are in fact far less heavily treated with pesticides than those that are not burned. It is also provided with no real analysis that the hypothesized pesticide increase presents a greater threat to human health than does the present exposure of the population to field burning smoke. So in the absence of such critical information and analysis, the Council's argument merely impugns the efforts of the majority of growers who, in fact, have adopted more sustainable practices. We urge you to support this measure.
Thank you, Dan. And Holly, you have about just under 3 minutes left.
Okay. My name is Holly Higgins, and I live in Harrisburg. And the reason, and I want to thank you for this opportunity. The reason I'm here is I represent people who live in what Paul Hovey calls sacrifice zones. So much of the attention around field burning has been on the keeping it out of the population centers. And I'm somebody that lives in a rural area. And there's actually 84,000 of us. So there's 84,000 of us that, when the smoke management program is working correctly, will regularly receive high impacts of field burning smoke because that's the way the program's designed. The smoke management program can't tell us how the smoke is impacting the rural communities because it's not being measured. And I would ask you to turn to page 16 in the report that Dan gave you, figure number 3. And it's really one of the main points that I want to make. If you look at that chart, the round circles represent the nephelometers. That's where they measure the smoke. And the little, I don't know if it's color for you, they're little tiny circles, they're yellow. Mm-hmm. That represents the burns. 94% of the burns happen 5 miles or further away from the nephelometers. Where I live, and they burn the fields right at the bottom of my hill, I'm at least 14 miles away from a nephelometer. There's a woman you're going to hear from a little bit later who lives in Staten, and there, which is between Salem and Lyons, the two circles you see. So when there's really high impacts in Lyons, it's much, much worse than Staten, and it's not measured. And the last point I want to make is that I'm here to ask you to please, please take a stand for the science. This has become an extremely emotional issue. The growers will tell you that they've greatly reduced the amount of acres that they've burned, which is true. But the science will tell you that even 40,000 acres is still extremely hazardous to our health. My parents live next door. They're in a sensitive population, and so does my nephew. They're most at risk. So when there are plumes of smoke engulfing my home and inside my home, I know that my parents are more at risk of having a heart attack. That's what the science says. And lastly, I just want to add, so many people that spoke yesterday talked about how they're in good health and they like fires and they're around the fires. Well, both of my grandparents died of smoke-related illness, and they were cigarette smokers until they died. And so we really need you, for all of us, to protect by taking a stand for what the science is saying, pulling the politics and the emotions out. Thank you.
Thank you. Good timing. Any questions before this witness is asleep? Right. Thank you very much for sharing your comments. Okay, the next panel, and then we'll go into off the sign-up sheets after that. It's Roger Beyer, Nick Bowers, Derek Shoemaker.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
While they come up, a question to you or Beth on the change to DEQ from the Department of Agriculture on there. Just wondering about the rationale.
Well, we have the department here, and they can come up and address that.
I can just share with the Senator. They are the ones that monitor the Clean Air Act.
DEQ does, and ODA gives out the permits.
Right.
So they're going to start collecting the fees?
Oh, they collect fees.
DEQ, yeah.
Well, yeah. Why don't you tell
so
the different
part of
can.
The bill. Sorry, let me grab my... part of the bill does include establishing a new account that the fees effective July 1st, 2011, that the fees would go into any remainder in the current account would go into the Department of Environmental Quality Service Fund. Currently, those funds are dedicated to the Department of Agriculture Service Fund. So effective 2011, it would transfer and any future fees or fines would go into that account.
And that's a question. You want to have the agencies come up?
When they come up.
They're only coming up to answer questions. So after this panel, we can have them come up. Okay, gentlemen, why don't you get started?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I am Executive Secretary of the Oregon Seed Council. You have in front of you a packet that I put together for you. I am not going to read through the packet or through it page by page. I will simply point out some pages in this packet that I think are important to highlight. First, on page 2 of the packet, you see a chart that lists the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. And it's important to point out that these standards are that, just that. They are standards that are adopted by the EPA in order to protect our vulnerable population. These standards have to mean something if we are going to survive and if we are going to be able to have any industry in this state. These standards have to mean something. You will see everyone talks about PM 2.5. The PM 2.5 standard is 15 and 35. The next, on page 4, I have listed the 1998 data from the Lehigh Valley about these very standards. And this lists the highest date of the standard, the PM 2.5 levels are recorded in the Willamette Valley. And the reason I point this out is that the only place in this chart in the Willamette Valley you will see the standards are at the highest recorded level during the summer months, during the field burning months, is in the station in Lebanon. And the only reason that is the case is because they only measure in Lebanon during the summertime. They do not run that nephelometer during the rest of the year. I then have attached many charts talking, showing the daily or the monthly air quality throughout the, again, Willamette Valley, and you will notice that without exception, we are always in the good or moderate range in the Willamette Valley during the summer months for the PM 2.5 standards. Those are the field burning seasons. I have attached the ODA field burn report. I won't go into that. You probably have already seen that. You will see on page 24 that there is two graphs. One is the hospital discharge for asthma in 2007. Below you will see the acres burned by months in 2006, 2007, 2008. And you will again see the exact time the fields are being burned is the exact time the asthma incidences for hospitalization are the lowest in the state.
Mr. Breyer, can I just ask you a quick question on
sure.
this? This is, though, the top chart is, this is statewide. Is that correct?
It is correct.
So do you have the similar data for hospitals within the areas where the fields are being burned? Because I think that might be more indicative.
I do not have that, Madam Chair. This was from the asthma report, which is issued statewide. You'd have to ask someone from the health department probably to get that detailed information. Madam Chair, I would then like to point you to page 27, and right behind 27 is an editorial about that was in the Oregonian on, I don't remember, I don't have the date right in front of me, but it was a recent editorial from the Oregonian, and it states in that editorial that the town of Lebanon was socked in, he says, at the hospital. Mom's room just reeked of acrid field smoke. It is a hazard to anyone's health, but especially the sick and the frail. This was a statement by Tom Bauer. The page right in front of that is a statement from Samaritan Health Services, who runs the community hospital in Lebanon. They would disagree with that statement. And I don't know when Mr. Bauer's mother was in the hospital. It doesn't say that in the article, but you can read that for yourself. I won't read it for you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, this bill, this packet was kind of set up to talk about the health effects of field burning. I think that all you have to do, if you have a chance, is listen to the testimony of Gail Shibley, who is the administrator of the Office of Energy Environmental Public Health for the state of Oregon. That department recently, January of this year, conducted an exhaustive, those were her words, an exhaustive study. They had three doctors at OHSU, and I think it was someplace else, but anyway, they had three doctors. She handed that study in yesterday, but her quote was very clear. Health Division conducted a thorough review of available research, and while some cases raised eyebrows, they could not find anything that has a definite connection to field burning. That was January 2009. And that study is available. She probably has it. I'm sure she's in the hall. She was a little bit ago. That was yesterday. So this committee, this bill, talks about much more than health effects. And this bill does have economic effects on both farmers and the state of Oregon. One of those economic effects is just by holding these two hearings these last 2 days. In springtime, two farmers, sunny days, are like cash. They have certain work they have to get done at a certain time, usually when it's not raining. By losing two afternoons in that time period, they may be faced with 6 weeks of weather that they are not able to get their work done, but this 2 days could have a very economically effect to them. But another economic effect, there are many, and you will hear about those from others after me. In fact, I was going to start by saying Sir Isaac Newton is the one that said for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. And there are probably 50 to 100 people here who want to talk about the equal and opposite reaction that this passage of this bill would cause. But economically, I would just like to point out that at least one species of grass that's being grown in the valley today likely will go away or be very severely curtailed with passage of this bill because of the agronomy of growing the fine fescues. I'd also like to point out that there was also an editorial in the Oregonian on February 14th about field burning. That editorial spoke of a wedding that was ruined by smoke from field burning in July of 2007. at a vineyard in someplace in Lane County or Linn County. I don't remember for sure which it was. But interestingly enough, we asked the vineyard for their schedule of weddings in 2007. They provided that to us, and there was no burning on any days they had weddings in 2007. So I guess I just say that to point out that some people don't seem to be get beyond the past and get to where we are in the industry today. Much has changed in the last 20 years in the industry. I would then, not to use all the time this panel has, I would like to point out a couple more things. We've heard a lot about nephelometers and the fact that they don't measure where the smoke is going, and we need more of them. Well, ORS 468A615-3C requires the smoke management program, which is funded by the farmers, to fund the monitoring of the air quality. And if more nephelometers are needed, the farmers are more than willing to fund the purchase and the running of those nephelometers. Those nephelometers have been placed in specific locations by DEQ and LRAPA, the Lane Regional Air Quality Protection something, and they have been placed where in spots where smoke is expected to concentrate, not just field burning smoke, but all smoke. But if they're more needed, the statute provides that the farmers will fund them and put them out there, and they will be paid for the annual use of them. We also hear a lot about notification. Our guys would love to have more notification. We could easily choose 12 or 15 or 20 days of summer and say those are the days we're going to burn on. The statute could reflect that, just like we do when you schedule a committee here. But I don't think the outcome would be nearly as good as it is today. We are committed to using the best available technology to notify both the farmers and the concerned citizens. We have another bill that I think you have positioned in your committee also, Senate Bill 698. There are amendments that I've asked to be drafted for that bill to make that bill more specific. So the bill was put in without many specifics in it. I'd be happy to go over those if you want me to at this time.
No, we don't have time, Roger.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll allow my people on my left and my right to talk about their specific instances.
Okay. And please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nick Bowers. My wife, Dawn, and I operate a family farm in Harrisburg, along with our two children who now attend college. We farm over about 1,000 acres of annual ryegrass, clover, meadowfoam, and wheat. I'm here today to talk to you about the benefits of field sanitation by field burning, which include the environmental effects as well as the benefits to the economy. Because I'm a fourth-generation grass seed grower, I'm very familiar with the history and the controversial aspects of field burning. Last week, my wife asked a riddle to me. She said, you have a bathtub full of water. I'm going to give you the choice of a bucket, a cup, and a teaspoon to empty the tub. Which one are you going to choose? The answer is none. A smart person would just pull the plug. Sometimes the obvious conclusion is not the best solution. And that's how I feel the ban on field burning is. Besides my farm, I have also started a small company with a neighbor to market annual ryegrass into the Midwest as a cover crop, falling corn and soybeans. Some reasons that the cover crops are used there are to stop erosion and to capture excess nitrogen that finds its way into the Gulf of Mexico through the Mississippi River. In the state of Ohio, the average acre of farm ground every year loses 4.7 tons of topsoil due to erosion. Cover crops are very important in becoming a solution to this problem. There are 17 million acres of corn and soybeans in Indiana and another 17 million acres in Illinois alone. The potential for annual ryegrass as a cover crop in this market is huge. One of the challenges for ryegrass in the market is being able to spray Roundup in the spring to burn down or to kill the annual ryegrass. Without field burning, many generations of seed can survive in our fields here in the valley. We call this a seed bank. There can be up to 200 pounds of seed per acre left in the field after harvest. We only need 10 pounds to plant for next year's crop. This can cause genetic impurity, and we can have more than one generation of seed growing in that same field. So when Midwest farmers are controlling the annual ryegrass has a cover crop in the spring, they have a small window of opportunity because of seasonal weather conditions. If the ryegrass is coming out of dormancy at different times because there are different generations, it can be difficult to kill. This will discourage the use of ryegrass in this market. Field sanitation from field burning is one of the many tools that I would like to continue to use on my farm. We use crop rotation as much as is available for our poorly drained soils. I've also volunteered annual ryegrass with a full straw load. And with clean fields from burning, I'm able to use more no-till planting practices. I believe with burning as one of my practices that I will use less fuel, use fewer pesticides, and have less dust and erosion. Without field burning, I will be forced to use more conventional tillage, such as a plow, which can release more carbon into the atmosphere. I ask you to consider the consequences of a ban on field burning. I know you do not want to hurt Oregon agricultural markets or the environment, but I believe that's exactly what this bill will do. Just like the problem with draining the bathtub, assuming an easy conclusion is not always the best solution. So thank you for your time and consideration in this matter. Please remember that it affects our large amount of people and the economic welfare of the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
Greetings, Chairperson Dingfelder and committee members. My name is Derek Schumacher. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I'm a native Oregonian. I live between Staten and Lyons. I received my bachelor's degree from Oregon State University in 1997 and was a graduate student until 2005, where I received my master's of sciences degree. I am here to discuss my research thesis, in which we investigated residue management and yield characteristics of fine fescue seed crops. The results of the study infer detrimental effects on the environment without the use of thermal residue management or open burning. The justification for the study was to seek alternatives to post-harvest residue management of fine fescue seed crops. The objectives were to characterize differences in yield components of cultivars among different residue management treatments and to evaluate these cultivars and their responses to residue management treatments. The procedure was to evaluate 10 commercially produced cultivars consisting of three subspecies of fine fescue, that being Chewings fescue, Strong Creeping Red Fescue, and Slender Red Fescue. Cultural practices were typical of those used in fine fescue production in the Willamette Valley. Our statistical analysis was done using SAS and ANOVA. Our experimental design was a randomized complete block design with a strip plot arrangement of treatments in four replications. Our main plots were three residue management treatments, the first being thermal residue management or open burning, and the second being non-thermal residue management, which consisted of raking, baling, and flailing that plot. And then we mowed it to 2.5 centimeters. And the third, we mowed to 5-centimeter stubble heights. Our yield component sampling and measurements taken were fertile tiller number, spikelets per panicle, florets per spikelet, panicle length, and total dry weight. These all play a critical role in final seed yield of fine fescue. We took 3 years of yield data. Year one was without treatment. Final seed yield and yield trends were analyzed, and an economic analysis was done using a partial budgeting technique. Additional costs of residue management were incorporated into the three treatments. Our 2003 results, we had a net loss under non-thermal residue management ranging from $92 to $889 loss per acre. The net loss in 2004 under non-thermal residue management ranged from $50 to $1,189 per acre. We are losing more money as the stand ages without thermal residue management. Thermal residue management or open burning significantly increased over non-thermal residue management with respect to total dry weight, spikelets per panicle, florets per spikelet, and panicle length. It's important to note that these all play a key role in final seed yield. In conclusion, thermal residue management is critical in maintaining profitable seed yield in fine fescue seed crops as the stand ages. Unlike Mr. John Neumeister's previous testimony, I actually have 3 years of data in which we tried to seek alternatives to thermal residue management or open burning in fine fescue and did not record any. non-thermal residue management did not produce profitable seed yield, as we hypothesized. Moreover, in the study, it cannot be considered a viable alternative to thermal residue management. Without thermal residue management or open burning, Willamette Valley growers cannot produce fine fescue on a long-term rotation as desired. 6 to 10 year rotations will be eliminated. 1 to 2 year rotations are economically and environmentally unacceptable. Shorter rotations will create soil erosion, which will be increased due to increased tillage. The soil quality will decrease. The organic matter will be lost. Carbon will decrease through venting. Carbon sequestration will go down as well. Chemical and fertilizer applications will increase a minimum twofold. We will lose. Growers will not be able to use no-till practices or conservation tillage without the use of thermal residue management. Without thermal residue management, no-till will not work due to pest, disease, and crop residue. Water quality will be an issue. Straw disposal is an issue. It will be an issue. Approximately 4,000 semi-loads a year of fine fescue straw will have to be disposed of. There's no use for it export-wise, or it has zero feed value. Loss of thermal residue management or open burning will have a direct effect on the economy in Oregon. We may be a small minority, but we are a leader in exporting seed globally. Loss of thermal residue management or open burning will decrease the availability of exportable seed due to phytosanitary issues with the seed. It's important to note that Europe is leaps and bounds ahead of the United States on the green movement, and they still allow field burning in Europe as a tool, and they consider it a method of organic farming. Are there any questions?
Any questions for the panelists?
I do.
Senator Brzozinski.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if you want them to answer the questions now, or if I should just pose them so Roger can get us back. I know we have a lot of people that want to testify. I can just, however you want to handle it.
Well, why don't you state your questions, and then we can see if Roger can answer them quickly. If not, he'll get us the information.
All right. Here's the issues I'm taking in, is this balance between health care and economics. And so I would like to know, as to my understanding, currently there are 90% of the Willamette Valley seed farmers are not using the technique of field burning. Only 10% are today. I understand that Washington State has higher yields since they've stopped burning, that their yields have actually increased in the areas of where they have grass seed production. There's nothing, and I'd like to know what the time frame is and the application of pesticides, as to knowing that the way our system works at this point, no one knows for sure they're going to actually even be able to burn. And so what's the rotation for applying pesticides? What is the over an annual period for the last 3 years? And lastly is the area of the fine fescues. My understanding, most of that is in the steep terrain. That does, in fact, have, at this point, an allowance for that to burn, understanding that it does have, as the bill is currently written, having a drawdown. That is an area that I will tell you that I'm willing to look at as maybe not having that, if we can actually demonstrate that that's the only way that that can be done. But when we have a state to the north of us that has done a reduction and actually prohibition of burning, and their yields are supposedly higher, and then I hear and I've seen in the packet that's been given to me that there's been direct correlations of field burning and death of individuals. I'm very concerned about that. So if you can take the time, and Roger, get that information to us, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will get that back to the committee.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate it. And now we have the agency here, Department of Environmental Quality, is going to come up and answer Senator Hass's question, and then we're going to go to taking testimony and limiting that to 3 minutes maximum.
I have a question as well for him.
Okay, so did you hear Senator Hass's question?
My name is Andy Ginsberg, and the Air Quality Administrator with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and I'd appreciate if you could repeat the question.
I was just trying to understand the rationale for switching out some of the ag responsibility to DEQ. I notice that's in addition to this.
Madam Chair,
my larger policy question, I was just wondering about this
Madam Chair, Senator Haas, in the governor's bill, we don't have that transfer occurring, so I can't speak to the rationale in Senator Przanski's bill for the transfer, but I can tell you that we operate with it. The Department of Agriculture operates the field burning program under a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Environmental Quality, and so they do the practical on the ground implementation where they check the meteorology and they make the burn calls. DEQ still operates the air quality monitoring, so you know it's kind of a coordinated effort, but they have the tactical on the ground portion of it. Under Senate Bill 528, burning would only occur for 2 years, and it would only be on the steep terrain, so it would be a small number of acres burned. And so whichever agency were running the program, there wouldn't be much of a program to run. But I can't really explain to you, you know, what the rationale for the transfer would be for those 2 years.
Senator Przanski, did you want to address that? Or?
Well, I would just say my understanding is that DEQ is charged with regulating under the Clean Air Act. And that is the reason why the proponents have put this into the agency that actually already has that obligation and duty, has the expertise to actually run a system for clean air. Follow-up to this, Madam Chair, I'd like DEQ to actually get back to us. We've had testimony from Ms. Higgins that states that 94% of all burns occur at least 5 miles away from the monitoring stations. That seems to me, I'd like to know exactly why the monitoring stations are so far away, what impact as to being able to actually know for sure what those impacts of that type of smoke would have being regulated so far, such a distance away. And I understand from we may be hearing from another individual who will be testifying that they regularly have intrusions into their area, and the closest monitor station is 14 miles away. It just seems to me that if we're trying to monitor something that has apparently been shown through the data to be a high risk for the fine particulates, that 5 miles away versus 14 miles away versus 1 mile makes a lot of difference as to where those stations are at. So I'd like the department to get back as to how this is done and why it's why, if it's true, why we have monitoring stations so far away from the actual burns.
Okay. And if you can follow up with that information.
Okay. There's one other thing. My understanding is that the way the monitoring stations are set up, there are certain averages that are taken, mm-hmm. and that we don't, in fact, actually have a daily log, and that some of the days that actually where burns occur, that they are not actually being logged as days of documentation for what impact it has on the communities.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Okay, first I'm going to call up folks who came from over 100 miles to testify. That's Jake Gibbs. Can you come up to the podium? Marie Bowers, Ron Bernard. Where's that, Ronnie? And Gretchen Gantz. Okay. And whoever gets there first, just get started, and please remember to state your name for the record. I think what we'll do is, why don't we add a chair on the end here so we can sort of cycle folks through. Okay, why don't you go ahead and get started and state your name, please.
Okay, my name is Marie Bowers. I'm a fifth-generation grass seed farmer. I graduated from Washington State with 2 degrees, one in agriculture, one in agriculture economics and management. I grew up field burning, and actually I was here in the 91 hearings. My dad took me to these field burning hearings, so I've been involved with field burning for a long time. I just want to say that farming is not just a lifestyle choice. It's also a business. And in a business, efficiency is key, and efficiency equals profitability. Efficiency comes when you have budgeted amount of time and money, and you meet those standards, or even use less time or money than originally planned. Field burning is used as a tool for efficiency and to meet your budget. A ban on field burning would impact any farmer's budget and his greatest expenses, such as fuel, fertilizer, and chemicals, and most importantly, time. A budget farmer's greatest tool for making a living. In these times of market uncertainty, a farmer's fate could depend on his financial plan. And I also should say I work for a local ag lender, and as a lender I've come to realize how important it is to the success of a farmer that he stays and lives within his budget. In the past years of prosperity, it was easy to stretch the limits of a budget. However, it was also just a few years before that we cannot pay people to take the straw out of our fields. and it looks like that will begin shortly as the hay and straw market forecast looks as dreary as most ag markets. The price of annual ryegrass has dropped to 10 cents below break-even, and if burning is banned, it could raise the break-even price, making losses on crops more significant. 10 cents below break-even is what we would have received if the seed was moving at the moment. Just like every other market, things have slowed to a crawl. So I ask you, please do not pass a bill that would put unnecessary financial burden on a farming operation or create a deterioration to an industry. Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Just have to slide the microphone over a little. Thank you.
Madam Chair and the committee, thank you. My name is Ronnie Bernard. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. I'm a fourth-generation Oregonian, and I'm a woman whose family has farmed and logged in Oregon since the late 1800s. My roots run deep. I love this state. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I want to share with you the shame I feel over the fact that Oregonians continue to allow field burning, the practice that took the lives of my beloved friends, Bill and Kate Duhem Rodewald, and their two beautiful baby daughters, Dale and Mia, over 20 years ago in the tragedy on Interstate 5. The emotional and physical health of Oregonians has been overlooked long enough. New data has surfaced that shows that fine particulate matter caused by field burning is injurious to public health. But I'd like to talk to you about the emotional ramifications of field burning. There's the undeniable and perennial grief I feel over the loss of Bill and Kate and their daughters, a grief that is renewed each year with the intrusion of field burning smoke, a grief that has not lessened over these 20 years. I would like to share with you what it's like to be stopped on I-5 by ODOT because of the intrusion of field-burning smoke across the freeway on a hot summer day, windows rolled up, no air conditioning, a living hell. Experiencing firsthand what Bill and Kate must have experienced before their violent deaths. Fortunately, I made it home. I'm still alive, and I'm here to speak for those who no longer have a voice, those who died as a result of that horrific incident in 1988. In their names, so that their deaths not be in vain, I ask you to support Senate Bill 528, which asks for an immediate ban on field burning. We're long overdue to send the practice of field burning the way of the wigwam burners that fouled the air of Oregon for so many years, decades ago. We do not deserve to endure, physically or emotionally, another season of field burning. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony today.
Hello, I'm Gretchen Gantz, and I'm here also to represent Kate Duhem Rodewald, my friend. I was here in 1991 and was really discouraged about the process of trying to get a bill passed to ban field burning. So we have 40 years, 20 years, and now here I am today. I would like for you to support this bill. It's timely. We've put up with enough, and Ronnie really covered all the pieces. We're here today because our friends could not be here. With a shift of wind, a simple shift of wind, the grass fire that was burning next to the freeway blew across the freeway, blinding the drivers, killing all four of our friends at the same time. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. You can slide that over.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Jake Gibbs, Lone Rock Timber, forester from Roseburg. I'm in opposition, unlike my neighbors to the left, to Senate Bill 528 for much more different reasons than would have been stated for the biology, I guess, on farming. I'm not a farmer, but I do have my major concerns are on banning a proven and effective management tool. Because of, I think we're after intended consequences, and we have not addressed unintended consequences. Transferring, as Senator Haas has brought up, the transfer of authority from ODA to DEQ is concerning. And also, I think this legislation enhances the conflict around natural resource management issues that continue in this state. It almost exacerbates that, pitting winners against losers. I don't know which side of it you would be, but you'd be saying one is one versus the other, and I don't think this is an opportunity to get past that conflict. And I guess I'll just emphasize that last point because that's the one I'm most emphatic about. Banning field burning will be viewed as a win to some audiences and a loss. And are we better at this? I don't believe so. I think the technologies, and I would ask you to pursue with ODA and DEQ, if we are utilizing the technologies available to prevent smoke from getting into places we don't want it. That is, I think, the objective of this bill is to human health. And keeping smoke from people is in my best interest as well, I think. And I would challenge the agencies, are they capable of utilizing technologies? Do they have the money to buy them? Is it available? I think we would be more better served to explore options that look to maintain the practice but keep the smoke out of people's urban areas. And I don't know that we have fully explored that. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much for traveling so far to come here today, share your views. Okay, next up, and I'm just going to call four people at a time so we can just keep moving. We have a lot of people that would like to speak today. Danuta Pfeiffer, Margie Hoffman, Steve Rodwell, and let's see, Carla Herbert. And I will try not to, I'll try to say your name right, and I apologize if I don't. Just a reminder, please state your name for the record. Make sure that we do have it right.
My name is Danuta Pfeiffer. I am the owner of Pfeiffer Winery in the foothills of Junction City in Lane County. I am also the founder of the Oregon Country Trails, an agritourism system that represents over 80 rural businesses. And although up to now the state of Oregon may think that the wine industry and tourism is a sacrificial goat, to allow field burning to come into our areas of operation, to the contrary, I must say that I represent two gorillas in the living room. It's wine industry and tourism. Pfeiffer Winery hosts visitors from around the world who come to the Willamette Valley for world-class Pinot Noir. Our wine has been served at the inauguration of Barack Obama. People come from all parts to enjoy not only the wine, but the sustainable practices that the wine industry in the Willamette Valley has worked very, very hard to market, to talk about the clean air and the clean grapes and the clean agriculture. But instead of focusing on wine too many times during the summertime, I'm trying to explain away the air pollution. One example is a wedding. Yes, it did happen. And yes, I can provide the dates. There was a wedding at our vineyard, and we have events all summer long. We have weddings. We have outdoor dining experiences on the patio. We have charitable fundraisers. We do a lot of outdoor activities at the winery. On this one particular time, the smoke was so thick, we thought our forest was on fire. We have a forest that is on the other side of our property. We called the fire department, the local fire department, because big chunks of ash were coming over through the forest and was landing on the bride's veil. So we called the fire department because the sky had turned yellow and then black and gray. And the fire department called us back because they had to investigate. They had also had a lot of other calls about this, told it was field burning, and then I called, of course, the DEQ and got the same runaround that a lot of other people get. As the founder of the Oregon Country Trails, it is Oregon's only branded agritourism system in the state. And we lure visitors to our rural businesses located in some of Oregon's most beautiful landscapes. But instead of pointing out the beauty, my rural businesses are trying to find out why the air pollution comes to their place and why they have to be sacrificed for the sake of other people who are more verbal in the urban areas. So on behalf of rural businesses, wineries, and tourisms, I ask you this question. Why are our industries discriminated against for the sake of an antiquated practice of the seed growing industry? Field burning is embarrassing, harrowing, and unhealthy, both for business and breathing. I strongly support SB 528. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a reminder, actually, these mics are very sensitive, so it actually is better if you're 3 to 4 inches away because we can hear you better. So go ahead.
Alan Paranum. Madam Chair, Committee, my name is Carla Herbert, and I'm here on behalf of my patients. As a registered nurse and an exercise physiologist, I work passionately to improve the quality of life for my pulmonary and cardiac patients through an extensive education and exercise program at Peace Health in Springfield. Been there about 12 years now. While the ODA tries to avoid smoke incursions to Springfield and Eugene, the evidence in the campaign's report shows incursions do occur. I see firsthand how my patients suffer, the folks with the heart and lung disease, how they suffer during field burning. They miss their exercise sessions because they're afraid to go outside. They're afraid to leave the indoors. They come in more short of breath. They have to use more oxygen. They're using more medications, inhalers, steroids. I have one patient who uses up to 7 different inhalers when she can't breathe. They often develop subsequent bronchitis infections. They have frequent doctor's visits, emergency room visits. Dr. Carolyn, the pulmonologist who spoke earlier, he takes call for these patients. He didn't get, and wasn't able to get into that, but many phone calls. And then people often have to be hospitalized because of an acute shortness of breath episode or progressive decline in the respiratory status after exposure to the smoke. I'd like to talk really briefly about the medications, particularly the steroids, the inhalers, prednisone, that patients, including asthmatics, people with lung disease, have to use as rescue medications. A lot of really nasty side effects, so the medication use comes with a really high price. Just a few, fluid retention, weight gain, causes them to be more short of breath. Stomach ulcers, muscle wasting, blockage in the arteries, we talked about that. One of my patients, Bonnie, she was just recently diagnosed with osteoporosis. That's another disease process. The bones become brittle, and she now has, 50-year-old woman has bones now of a 90-year-old woman because steroids pull the calcium from the bones. So just a couple comments. My patients have written letters over the years, have testified in front of Eugene City Council, Lane County Commissioners, town hall meetings. They've made calls over the years, and they're just really, really getting tired, tired of fighting. Barbara Sherlock from Eugene, you need to know that I suffer from bronchiectasis, which is a chronic lung infection that makes breathing difficult and is exacerbated by smoke of field burning. It is not right to force citizens from the Willamette Valley to hide indoors or to flee to the coast in order to breathe. Elizabeth Paul from Eugene. She has severe emphysema, uses oxygen 24 hours a day. She says, during field burning time each summer, my lungs take a beating, and I end up with significantly less lung function, which is irreversible.
I was going to say your time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me speak.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Steve Rodewall. 20 years ago, I lost my older brother, my sister-in-law, and my 2 nieces, 2 and 6 months old. And ever since then, I work in McMinnville and live in Monmouth, and driving home, I see these smoke plumes during the summer. They dig up the memories, and it's gotten easier as the years go on, because I just figured that's what the government has decided to do. But coming back from a soccer game in Cottage Grove last September, down there to watch my son play, just north of Eugene, as I was coming through, another one of those quote-unquote meteorological mishaps occurred. And there was field burning going on both the west and the east sides of I-5. And as I entered that area, I was, buried in smoke. Stuff that's supposed to go up in the air and disappear wasn't. It wasn't as heavy as my brother had to deal with, but it still brought back all those memories of what he must have endured at that time. I just would like to urge you, let's not make the same mistake of just sort of passing this on as the committee did 20 years ago. I urge a ban on fuel burning. Thank you.
Thank you. Margie.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman, and I'm here on behalf of the American Lung Association of Oregon. You have written testimony before you that goes through a lot of the lung and other health impacts of field burning. I'm not going to go into it because there are a number of people who want to testify today. I just wanted to point out that what we're talking about are both fine and coarse particles, PM 2.5 and PM 10. High levels of particle pollution can shorten life even if the exposure is over a short period like hours or days. People can die within days or weeks when breathing high levels, which field burning can produce, and many studies over the past two decades have confirmed this, including large studies around the world. I'd also like to point out that there are more than 2,000 peer-reviewed studies on the subject that have been published since 1996, confirming the strong relationship between particle pollution, illness, hospitalization, and premature death. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency recently completed a review of these studies and linked particle pollution to premature death from cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, and strokes, as well as worsening asthma, COPD, and even found that they may cause lung cancer. And the citation is there in the testimony if you want to see the full review. I also wanted to point out that children's lungs and the lungs of older people are more susceptible to the PM 2.5 and PM 10. Children, because their lungs aren't as developed, and older people because the immune systems start to break down. So I thank you for the ability to testify today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions either here or online. Okay. You have the unfortunate, you see me every day. So
thank you, Margie. Any questions for the panel? All right. Thank you very much. Next up is Michael Hay, Lindsay Zuber, Denny Taylor, and Kevin Turner. And I'm going to turn the gavel over for a minute while I go run and get something.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michael Hayes. I'm a fourth-generation grass seed farmer from the Albany-Lebanon area, and I want to talk a little bit about why we feel burn. There seems to be a lot of questions. People always want to know, why do we feel burn? And obviously, if I do choose to burn a field, I can pretty much guarantee that I'll use 79 to 90% less fuel than a conventional till and plant program, 25% less fertilizer, and almost always one application of herbicides instead of possibly three in a conventional till. Raking and baling obviously has been effective for straw removal. People always ask why so few of us burn, and that's because we used to burn 300,000 acres plus, and now we burn a maximum of 65,000 acres. So the few fields that we are allowed to burn, we must pick and choose the fields that will receive the most benefit, whether it be for a vole population, slugs, or just a problem with residue rotting down or being removed in that type of terrain. Fields that are continuously burned have shown to be viable fields that are show a good tilth for growing crops. And if we do choose to remove straw, that causes us to basically have to go back and replace nutrients that are removed with the straw with expensive fertilizers. Since the days of widespread burning, we've seen an increase of voles, slugs, diseases, and along with increased chemical applications. The field burning only happens a few days out of the year, and I had the opportunity to testify before the EQC, which is Environmental Quality Commission, which is an appointed body by the governor. the state of Oregon, and they unanimously found in favor of continuing the process of field burning. But at that time, they had instructed DEQ to do a health study of the effects of field burning on Oregonians. My vote was essential for allocating those funds because that was the funding from ODA and the grass seed industry. The DEQ had proposed that they would do that study, and for some unknown reason, Lane County decided they'd rather have that money to do a ethanol for straw proposal, and I've never really actually understood why, and I would like DEQ to clarify that for you folks. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Zuber, and I've worked on a farm for over 10 years. I lived in Lyons, which is called one of the sacrifice zones, for over 20 years with my family, which includes my brother, who is asthmatic and highly allergic to a variety of things. He has been in the hospital over 6 times for asthma-related issues. None of them involve field burning. I called him this morning to ask him about his experience with field burning. He said, sure, he can smell the smoke a few times, but never once did it affect him negatively. Those few times he compared to the smell of a campfire, which we happen to enjoy. He said, quote, in no way has it affected my quality of life. Field burning was here before me, and I respect the purpose of this practice in farming. It's part of the reason why I live in Oregon. We have heard several complaints about not having enough warning about when and where there's going to be a burn. Instead of focusing on a ban of field burning, how about improving the rules and guidelines we currently practice under? If we can get the word out to all school-age children that there will be no school because of a snow day, surely we can find a way to warn about burning. This is an issue with the rules, not with field burning itself. Oftentimes, burning is blamed for 4 months of smoke impact, when in fact, field burning took place on approximately 12 days in 2008. We cannot be, or we should not be, held accountable for the impact of forest fires, slash burning, backyard burning, etc. The most complaints I personally hear are before we ever start burning and long after we have finished. Even today, in the middle of March, people see a slash burn and blame the farmers. The bill has an extreme hardship condition that allows emergency burns. I believe this sounds good on paper, but I don't see it effectively playing out. Field burning is a preventive tool. Field burning is done so next year's crop has an acceptable yield. It prevents the disease outbreaks, insect infestation, and erosion damage. By the time these have reached an emergency condition, it's too late. We have irreversible damage at the minimum of one crop year. Based on economic and environmental reasons, fine fescue is the best grass that can be grown in the Cascade foothills. The practice of field burning enables fine fescue crops to last several years longer with acceptable yields. Without the practice, fine fescue production may become unprofitable. Despite much research from Oregon State University, no viable alternative has been found for field burning of certain grass seed species. Where there have been alternatives, we've reduced our field burning by 90%, as Dave Nelson has previously stated. There is a need for this remaining 10%. Our community of grass seed growers puts millions of dollars into the Oregon economy and employs thousands of people like myself. A ban on field burning will seriously affect the economic viability on Willamette Valley grass seed growers. I believe in these times we want all the successful businesses we can get. I want my employer to be successful so I can keep my job. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Kevin Turner. I manage the seed production and seed research program at the Scott Company. I came out here to work in the business back in 1974, and one of the first things I saw was some work down at Oregon State on alternatives to field burning. And I've seen them for the last 35 years, and I'll tell you what, you can add them all up, and here's what they add up to. We're going to move this important crop to another area of the country. Let me go through a few examples. When I got here in 1974, the Willamette Valley had 20 or 30,000 acres of Kentucky bluegrass. We got about 20 or 30 now, and I might be overestimating it. It's because without field burning, we lose the advantages that we have in production economics. Perennial ryegrass. This year, we'll harvest 75,000 acres of perennial ryegrass in Minnesota and Manitoba. 10 years ago, we had none. in those areas. Production economics with the ban on fuel burning have moved their production to areas that are more competitive. This spring, fine fescue. There will be over 15,000 acres of Oregon-improved fine fescue planted in northern Alberta. Why? Because the production economics are not favoring perennial ryegrass, Kentucky bluegrass, fine fescue and tall fescue production here in the Willamette Valley in a competitive world. Now let me talk about perennials versus annual crops. And the grasses are perennials, and that's really a good thing. Now think about this. With a perennial, you plant it once, and then you get to harvest that field 5 years, 10 years, sometimes even 15 years if you've got good management, which would include field burning. Without the ability to remove the straw, the duff, the dead leaves, the tillers, the thatch off these fields, the productive life of a stand is shortened. Senator Przanski, you mentioned in Washington, no difference or in yields on bluegrass. This is not my experience. We've got 15,000 acres up there, and field burning is limiting our production opportunities there and have shortened rotations under irrigation to one crop year. In fact, we're farming them as annuals and losing the benefits of the perennial, which is you don't have to get in there and plow the field every year. You plant it once and harvest it for multiple years. Now, when you plow a field, you got to drive a tractor across the field. You're burning up fuel, and you're putting carbon dioxide into the air and lots of other pollutants. Okay, I see my time is almost up. I know that there's lots of sources of pollutants, not just field burning. There's lots of sources of particulates. In fact, as you drive across the country, there's a lot of places with real dirty air, pumping CO2 into the atmosphere and not putting oxygen into the air like grass seed does 11 months out of the year. Let's don't go there. Let's keep our grass seed industry here in Oregon where it belongs.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Well, let's finish this panel and we'll come back and ask questions real quick because I have one for Mr. Turner to follow up on. Go ahead.
All right. Hello. Hi. My name's Dennis Taylor. I farm in the Silverton Hills. Farming is my livelihood. One thing that I want to note here, that everybody in this room is an environmentalist. Sometimes I think the farmer gets a bad rap for not being an environmentalist. We are environmentalists. We may differ in our approach on how we get there, but we are environmentalists. I have my grandpa, my dad, myself, my son now farms with me. Soon a grandson will be farming with me. You know, of all the people that I know, there really isn't any of them that have any of these health issues. You know, it kind of, this morning I woke up and it made me think, what is the common thing why people from the urban areas seem to have health issues where farmers have testified that they don't seem to have these issues? I couldn't, and my conclusion is there must be something other in these urban areas that is causing this. We don't experience this. I personally know, in 45 years of farming, I know lots of farmers. I don't know any that have any problems. It just amazes me why the problems are isolated to the urban areas. But anyway, I kind of had to change my notes a little because everybody didn't want me to repeat, and everybody seems to say the same thing, and I agree with most of it here as far as pesticide use, diesel fuel, and all of that stuff. One story, though, I'd like to tell you is back in the mid-'80s, grass seed prices were down. Wheat prices were up, so there was a wheat planted on acres that hadn't seen wheat planted on them for literally years. We went from a perennial type of crop to an annual type of crop. In the winter, I went over to a field that lies right above Silver Creek Canyon. There's probably an 800-foot drop in elevation from the top of the canyon to the bottom. I looked over the hill, and I go, what happened? The whole side of the canyon just literally let loose 25 years ago. Today, you can still see the remnants of where the hillside became saturated with water. that went down there. There's rocks. It looked just like an avalanche that you'd see on TV the entire winter. I'm driving by the creeks that run through Silverton and Drift Creek and a lot of the other tributaries around there. They ran brown the entire year. In the wintertime, it was just made me sick to see all that topsoil. What's that do? Fish, water quality. It's just a number of issues. Thank you, 15 seconds. So let me just sum this up. I want to say that somebody before has said that the fine fescue has no value whatsoever. That's true. It's just weak. It's not feed. It's not anything. There's no way to get by with it. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay. You guys are good before the big hook comes out.
I have questions for a moment.
Question Senator Hass?
Yes, I was just wondering. I appreciate the notion that this is a economic power that may move to another state, but 75% of this was phased down in the 90s, and that didn't really happen, even though there was some promise that it would. And there's been testimony today from growers that the industry is still strong.
Real quickly, in my particular case, probably two-thirds of my farm is in fine fescue. If we're not able to open field burn, it is in jeopardy of putting our farm out of business. We cannot do it. We'll have to go to more annual cropping, more short-term rotation, perennial cropping. And then all these other issues play into it, the fuel issues, the herbicide issues, and the dust, and all of those things start playing into that. But in some areas of the valley, they have been successful without being able, they figured out how to do it. They have never figured out, in all the studies that they've done, Oregon State's done them, had them years back, and they still do them today. We cannot get fine fescue to yield without burning. It just goes just down. That's just the way it is. So personally, this is really an economic thing to me, and I want to pass my farm on to my relatives and hope my grandson can farm like I did. It's a great life. It's fun. I enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Turner, I just want to get back, since you're working in the seed production company, if you could get us information regarding the actual yields that are occurring in Washington State as well as Idaho State. Those are the two states that actually, by either legislation or by court order, have done away with field burning as we know it. I do understand that Washington State last year actually allowed for some burning to occur. I also would like to know, it sounds like some of your concerns is the specific species of grass seed that's being shifted away, and I'm wondering if those have been actually replaced by other maybe higher market seed species by farmers here.
I can easily get that information for you. And, in fact, we've got about 10,000 acres of what we call dryland bluegrass production in eastern Washington and Idaho. Some of that production is on Indian reservations where they still allow burning. So I can give you real good comparisons. And the data is real clear. Without field burning, stand life is shortened, yields are reduced.
But my understanding in Washington State from the data I've received actually says that that's not the case for non-Native American soil farms or areas that where there are other farmers in the Washington State area still are seeing high yields for what they are actually growing. So if you have the documents, I'd love to see them so I can compare them.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will run those through Roger and get those to you.
That'd be wonderful.
And if I could just make one comment, that's right. Since the 90s, these alternate production areas have been experimenting, developing, and now the acreages are getting really significant. That's 75,000 acres of perennial ryegrass. That's going to grow one-third of the total crop that would have been grown in Oregon and isn't anymore.
Okay, any other questions?
No.
Thank you. Okay, next up, Kenny Moore, Frank Turner, Drew Johnson, and Stephanie Jo Jorgensen. Okay. I'll be up next. I know it's a bit cozy up there, but it just goes quicker. So why don't we get started on this end?
Madam Chairman, I'm Kenny Moore. an old Olympic marathoner and Bill Bowerman's biographer. It's been 34 years since my fellow Olympians, Bowerman and Mike Manley, Steve Savage, Steve Prefontaine, and I testified right here to stop field burning. And obviously, I can't leave you guys alone for a minute.
Unfortunately, none of us were here then, but we appreciate the fact that you're consistent. Or I should say fortunately, but anyway. You have a new crop, so that's the good news.
We came, of course, from Eugene, and our message, the message I carry today was the same one then. Field burning is toxic, no matter how tough you are. Pre-cough so hard after a 358 mile and the 74 smoke invasion that he ripped muscles under his rib cage and ruined his season. And that legislature, completely different legislature, voted to allow the growers to go right on, privatizing their profits and socializing the cost by sending them off in clouds of carbon particles for Oregonians to unwillingly inhale. We knew then, and I know now, that seed growers did not will us harm. They're not bad people. They're not bad people. There's not a bad person in this room. They're farmers, and farming good food and seed is humanity's absolute foundation. Bill Bowerman himself was a farmer. He grew up in Fossil and loved being on hay crew from the time he was 6 years old. He always came back from wherever he was in the summers to work hay crew. He knew there was no better instiller of values than working on the farm. No greater creator of responsibility and stewardship for the land and for each other. And you can see where I'm going with this, because in their undeniable goodness, their sense of responsibility, that puts many farmers in a real, growers in a real bind when they discover that other good people downwind are being given asthma and migraine and the whole concatenation of cardiopulmonary illness certified by medical report. Field burning is tough for good men to rationalize. So few have hedged the truth, citing measly winter wood smoke averages and smoke concentration when the real problem is those vicious spikes when the clouds come in. I'm here to tell you we can forgive the growers for their wrongs and urge them to better soil management so they can sin and go and sin no more. But we are indisputably right when we say burning is causing the same medical, irrefutable harm. It's the legislature's job to stamp it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orr.
I'm Frank Turner. I'm a pulmonologist from Eugene, and I'm here to try to clarify the medical side of this a little bit. You've received some medical testimony already from at least four other individuals, and I can cite the same studies indicating the problem we have with particulate matter in the smoke. I think we're overlooking the big problem, which is the airway disease that occurs in the asthmatics. And Carl Herbert talked a little bit about the cost of treating the asthmatics. It's such an obvious big problem that it's not the subject for current study, but it's really a very, very significant problem. And I can't really compare it to the problem of cardiovascular disease. I haven't gone through the numbers, but I think it's in terms of local impact from a local problem of local smoke. Asthma is a real biggie. The data on particulates is emerged only in the last 10 years. And the situation now with field burning is similar to what tobacco smoke was in the 50s and 60s, beginning to realize there's a problem in trying to regulate it. We also have the examples of asbestos, automotive problems, and their regulation, lead as an environmental hazard and its gradual elimination from the environment, asbestos, and the list goes on and on. It takes time for the information to accumulate, and it takes time for people to digest it and and act on it effectively. I was really surprised to start reading about the cardiovascular effects of particulates. If the study that was quoted by, I've forgotten his name, the gentleman who testified earlier, that there's no health impact from field-burning smoke, I'm really surprised because it has the precise pattern of spikes that have been shown in numerous communities in peer-reviewed medical studies. It's exactly the same situation, and I can't imagine that anybody has shown that our particulate smoke is somehow harmless. It's never been shown to be harmless in any place it's been studied. That's all I have to say, and I hope you'll pass this bill because I think it's an obvious, solvable problem.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Stephanie Jorgensen. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I raised two beautiful children. My son, Kellen, is 4. My daughter, Lainey, is 2 years old. I volunteer weekly at my son's preschool and at our community library to help educate young children in our community. My husband is a family physician. He was compelled to start a medical practice in a rural, needy community. 17 months ago, we relocated our family to Staten, Oregon. And this is my backyard that my children play in. These are photographs that I took last summer. I'm here because our family suffered through an entire burn season. And we do not want our children's tiny developing lungs to be exposed to another day of burning. The first time we experienced a burn day, we were mortified that the beautiful state of Oregon would pollute the very air that we breathe. We ran around, frantic, ushering the children inside the house. We shut our windows. We turned on the local radio station expecting to hear about some horrible disaster that had happened. But there was not a single news story. It just turned out to be an ordinary burn. From our backyard, inside of state and city limits, only 14 miles from the Lion's Nephlometer, whatever the monitor that they call it, you can see the billows of black and gray smoke climb the sky. Then you can see the haze cover the blue sky and float into our neighborhood. Despite closing all the windows, smoke still enters our house. Pieces of debris fall in our yard. Ash coats our cars and my children's toys in the backyard. Asthma is on the rise in this country, and the medical community attributes the increase to air pollutants. Unlike cigarette smoke, we cannot isolate ourselves from inhaling small particulate matter produced from field burning. Now, my husband and I, we know that field burning will harm our children. To protect their sweet lungs, we confined them inside on 11 burn days last season. It would have been more if we hadn't traveled out of town. Days after the burn, I don't know when the pollutants are out of the air. Do I let the kids play in the backyard the following morning or the morning after that? When is it safe? I'm also concerned for all of the kids that I see that are playing outside on burn days. It is obvious some of the parents in our community are unaware that field burning can harm their children and create a lifetime of respiratory problems. I want a ban on field burning effective immediately. Please support Senate Bill 528. Please do not expose our beautiful children to another day of burning. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. My name is Drew Johnson, and I'm here in support of SB 528. I live in Eugene, and I represent the City of Eugene on the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency Board of Directors. But I'm here today on my own behalf, and my comments are my own, and they don't represent the position of LRAPA or its Board of Directors. I've also worked as an air quality professional for over 10 years in Utah, Washington, and Oregon, so I'm familiar with air quality protection programs. But I'm also an asthmatic. As a child growing up in Utah, in the wintertime before they cleaned up their problem with wood burning from fireplaces, my mother regularly took me to the hospital in the middle of the night gasping for air. And she still talks about the terror of wondering if I was going to die in her arms. When I moved to Oregon 10 years ago, it came back for me what that feeling was like of having someone stepping on my chest, having a belt cinched tight, and me gasping for air. It happened last summer, coming down I-5, driving through a smoke plume. I don't take medication because it's not a regular occurrence. It only happens when I'm in thick smoke, like field burning. I spend my August days looking at the sky, wondering if I need to run indoors and hide. So I'm here to say there are asthmatics who are affected who don't show up on your data set. There are a lot of us. Because of the medicine, I don't want to take hormones. I don't need to. It only happens when I'm exposed to this kind of pollution. Now I want to talk about this program and a critique of the status quo of this so-called smoke management program that the Department of Agriculture runs. Someone commented earlier that we have standards, air quality standards. That's what you should look at to determine whether or not a program is protecting air quality. Well, standards are only effective if you measure the pollution. It's pretty easy for the Department of Agriculture to avoid Portland, Eugene, on most days, unless they have a weather mishap. And they can also avoid the monitors by sending up weather balloons and deciding when to burn and where. And so, frankly, the program that's in place is misplaced because the agencies responsible for protecting public health and air quality in Oregon, LRAPA and the DEQ, have absolutely no authority to do anything about the smoke caused by field burning. I'll wrap it up.
Your time's up. I'm going to have to stop you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Yeah.
I just want to say a comment here. How much I respect the testimony from everybody that's come here, and I know this is a very difficult issue, and it's not easy to come up here and do this. And I just want to, whatever side of this issue you're on, and Mr. Moore, I just, you know, you've distinguished yourself as a legendary runner representing our country in the Olympics as an author. But the fact that you're still here at this desk 30 years later as a citizen, I just think your citizenship is maybe even more remarkable than the other two.
Thank you, Senator House, for those comments. And I know as a runner, it was very appropriate. So next up, Brian Humbel, Phil Walker, Troy Hadley, and Mike Dykesel. And I have two people down from the Hazelnut Commission, so is it okay if one comes up,
yeah,
given the time? Thank you.
Fine, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you all. Why don't you go first here on the end?
Madam Chair, committee, my name is Brian Humbel. Thank you very much for this opportunity to have my voice heard. I am opposed to these new laws that we're trying to pass. And, you know, I came here to talk about how it affects my business and how it affects my ability to make a living. And I've been listening to everyone talk, and your jobs are going to be very, very difficult because it's hard to understand what the facts are. I myself am having a great deal of difficulty understanding the facts in this situation because I live in West Eugene. Apparently that's one of the hot zones. My wife is a nurse. My wife is an extreme asthmatic. My whole family runs. Not one time during the summer has field burning caused us problems. So I can appreciate people talking about it, and absolutely there's no doubt that, you know, holding your head over the campfire in the smoke is not a good idea. And the way I see it is, it's your guys' job to figure out, are these people's heads being held in the fire? You know, where is this smoke landing? Because I don't think there's anyone in this room that would disagree that smoke is bad for you. Even the big tobacco companies are finally admitting that smoke is bad. But the problem that I see is the facts. What are the facts? Where is the smoke going? Is the smoke is field burning smoke actually going into people's homes all across our state? And I just want to urge you to look at all the facts. Senator Przewodniczący, I appreciate your questions of that you've asked so far as to get to the bottom of, are yields impacted or are they not impacted? Because, you know, I believe that they are impacted, but apparently there's evidence that they're not impacted. Well, what's the real truth? Is it, well, we're getting all these phone calls because people see a plume in the air, or are they calling because the smoke is in their house and it's causing harm to their kids? You know, I hear people talking about having loved ones that died because of the tragedy. I can certainly appreciate that, and I can certainly see where they come, you know, ban field burning. A couple years ago, my son died on a treadmill. I'm not going after treadmill companies. I can very much appreciate people's loss, though. Thank you for your
time. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee. My name is Troy Hadley. I farm up in the Silverton Hills across Silver Creek Canyon from Denny Taylor. I can actually see his place from our place. But my family has been farming on the same ground for 138 years. We've started, back 100 years ago, they grew grain. That's all that anybody knew. Over the years, it's gone from hogs to strawberries. Silverton Hills were well known for the strawberry crops. But that has gone to the wayside. Now, currently, our only market, our only profitable crop is fine fescue. We do rotate a few other grains in with the market to help with the cover the loss of income, because we have to have fine fescue out for 2 years to keep the certification status. We would summer follow before we started growing the grains. We farm on our flattest field, it's got a 3% slope. Our steepest ground has got a 47-degree slope. The equipment used to remove the straw doesn't work. They don't build them to work on steep terrain. And as it's been said before, our yields are cut in half each year that we don't burn the crop. So it turns it into an annual rotation. That means we're tilling the ground every year. Sits out for 2 years, you can't do that. That is going to make us quit farming. We're going to sell the farm. It's our only option. Another option is said that you need to leave the straw on the and remove all this fertilizer. We use 100 pounds less fertilizer on fine fescue than perennial, and about compared to 250 pounds of nitrogen on perennial. But the fact that we burn actually leaves the potash on the field. The guys that are removing the straw now have to add the potash back to it. I submit that it's actually healthier and safer for Oregon to continue burning. 20 years ago, EPA recommended we continue burning to keep the waters clean. So if we might clean up the air a little bit, but then we're going to make our waters a lot dirtier. Our creeks and streams around us are cleaner than the ones are down in the valley. They've got perennial ryegrass planted in the fall compared to the spring planting that we do. And another few things we don't have because is the mice. Mice and rodents were well known, documented to cause of several plagues in human history.
And your time is up, sir. Okay. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Phil Walker. I'm the chair of the Oregon Hazelnut Commission. I might also introduce our administrator in the back, Polly Olin, if she's still here. Polly said I could do the talking today. We're here for the same reason that some of the people from the timber industry are testifying today, and that's because for most of us in the resource-based industries, fire is a very valuable tool for the management of plant diseases. Specifically for our crop, we have a terminal illness known as Eastern Filbert Blight, for which we need to remove infected branches from our trees and pile them up outside the orchard and burn them. And our specific concern with this bill, and we don't pretend to be lawyers, is that there are a number of instances in the bill where the term pile burning is used without grass or grain straw specifically attached to it. And we're fearful that a looser interpretation of the bill, despite the sponsor's promise that it was targeted specifically at grass and grain, might also include our ability to burn piles of infected prunings. But beyond that, the bigger issue for us is the fact that we believe that those of us in the resource-based industries, agriculture and timber, must stick together to defend these practices that we need to have to be able to maintain the profitability of our operations for our employees and for our families and also for the benefit of the economy of the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Deichsel, Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. The last couple of presenters mirror a lot of my thoughts. Mr. Gibbs from Roseburg earlier mirrored an awful lot of the thoughts that I had. I'd just like to score on a couple of them. The fact that we all appreciate this is a very highly charged emotional issue, and it's not that anybody's callous to either one side or the other. I think everyone really does appreciate each other's positions. As this last gentleman pointed out, the loss of a natural resource tool is concerning to all of us. I'm also a member of the Department of Forestry Smoke Management Advisory Committee, where we review programs regarding burning in the forests. We went through an extensive fire program review. It took about 3 years. We came up with a number of recommendations to minimize risk further. It sounds like there's an awful lot of questions that have been given to the committee, and they're all valid questions. We're very concerned that maybe not enough looking has taken place to look for ways to minimize. I guess I would see this as government's role here is to minimize risk, not to eliminate it at the sacrifice of one industry or interest over the other. And I guess finally, if there is enough support to move the bill forward, I would have the same concerns that Mr. Gibbs brought up earlier, is you've got a great relationship with the Department of Agriculture currently with the growers. Why at the 11th hour would you shift it over to DEQ? It sure makes a lot more sense in a phase-down mode that people could end up phasing out together with the relationships and familiarity that already exists. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
I have one question. That's Mr. Humble. You talked about, I think I caught your first statement that you're concerned about your job, but I didn't understand or I didn't hear what job you...
I'm an international shipper. I ship grass seed overseas. The issue I have is with phytosanitary certificates. It's much easier to pass a seed lot if that field has been burned. There's much less disease, almost no disease in the field that's been burned.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I could answer a previous question, Senator Brzezinski. Personal experience I've had with the experience in Idaho on where the person may have died from field burning. A lot of other states, when they burn the grain fields, they drop a match and walk away. We manage the fields so they do plume as much as possible.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, next up, David Monk, Carolyn Higgins, Maya Leonard, Khan and Nita Prefontaine. Like the runner.
Yeah. My name is Carolyn Higgins. I live in Harrisburg. I'm one of the sacrificed people. I'm one of the people that when they do burn, they want to burn, so it comes to my house. So from July the 5th until the 15th of November, I'm not sure when they're going to burn, but for the man who said he doesn't know about how, you know, why they can't get away from the burning, the field burning comes to my house, and it's planned that way. We have 60 homes on Mount Tom, which is about 200 people, but when they burn so it comes to my house. Until 4 years ago, I didn't care. And 4 years ago, my daughter, Holly Higgins, told me that the field burning smoke is a health hazard. And just like when I smoked in the early 60s, I said, no way, because I didn't want to believe it. I have a beautiful home, and I've lived there a very long time, and I did not want to move. But as she kept giving me information and I kept reading, is it true? Is field burning hazardous to my health? Is it true? And I had to say yes. And then I had to say, can I absolutely know that it's true? And I had to say yes. And so I'm here so that you can see that I can't get away from it. I'm there, and that's where the smoke goes. And for all my neighbors, for my 8-year-old grandson who lives 500 feet from me, and for the neighbors that either believe that it's a hazardous or they don't. It just depends on who's out and who's not. So I want you to look at me as someone who is right in the thick of it. And they talked about standing in front of a train yesterday. Well, I might be standing in front of a train because the tracks go right through my house. Thank you very much, and I'm hoping that you will absolutely pass this bill for me and my neighbors and for all of the people who live in Oregon.
Thank you. Can you move the mic over?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Chairman. My name is Nita Prefontaine. I am here today as a spokesperson for the group, and I would like to say that I am an example of a person who is suffering from field burning. I have asthma. I have 34% of my small bronchioles left and 50% of my large. Now, when I get into smoke, you know what happens? I have to run. I have to run and get my emergency dose of prednisone. I am one of those people that can't wait another 34 years for another one of these hearings. We have to do something now. We have to quit saying, oh, this is not quite important enough for us to do anything. It's your job to protect us. Please do your job, and please make the right decision on this, because it affects everyone. I brought my grandson, who's had asthma already. I don't want him to have to, or his mom to come back here in another 34 years and testify. I just don't want that to happen. My brother was here 34 years ago testifying on burning. Please get the field burning stopped. I don't care if they have to use tractors. Let them use tractors. But you know what? A life is a life. There's no amount of money or product or anything that is worth that. So I ask you please to think about this very seriously. Senator Brzezinski, I am so proud of some of those questions that you asked. Thank you for being really concerned and digging. I appreciate that. But I also want to say that I appreciate the farmers that have changed the way they do their burning, the way they do their fields. Thank you for thinking about the rest of the world, not just your little tiny world. Okay? I think you're great. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
And please vote for our bill, okay?
And I just want to make it clear, we're not voting today, but just for folks, if you don't know, today's a public hearing, but...
Yeah. Make it count.
Thank you.
That's all I ask. Don't make me come back here in 40 years, because I won't be alive.
You won't be here either, let me tell you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Maya Leonard-Kahn. I hold a master's degree in environmental science from Yale University, and I am the principal author of a report that you have in front of you that analyzes the effects of field burning smoke on air quality in the Willamette Valley. I've spent a considerable amount of time analyzing these air quality data. What I have found is that field burning frequently coincides with substantial smoke intrusions into communities that are sufficient, more than sufficient, to cause significant harm to public health. Now, the goal of ODA's smoke management program is to work with growers to reduce or eliminate smoke impacts, but each annual report includes the same disclaimer that smoke impacts still occur. Now, a number of people have testified today that they have borne the brunt of these impacts, and in fact, these smoke impacts occur with regularity. In 2008 alone, 8 out of 12 burn days, on 8 out of 12 burn days, smoke impacts occurred. That's a failure rate of 70%, and that is unacceptable. During the last 10 years, smoke impacts occurred on 60% of all burn days. So it is absolutely clear, according to the medical evidence, which is incontrovertible and overwhelming, that as long as field burning is permitted to continue in the Willamette Valley, smoke incursions will still occur in communities, and public health remains at risk. I ask you to support an immediate ban on field burning and pass Senate Bill 528. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is David Monk. I'm a recently retired board member with Oregon Toxics Alliance, and I've been asked to present this report to you and urge you to have your staff review it and bring back the findings to you. Essentially, the report reviews the uses of pesticides in grass seed production here in Oregon and the environmental fate of those pesticides. This report provides details on the environmental harm of over 56 different types of herbicides used in Oregon grass seed fields. These pesticides are applied on fields in the spring, in the fall, and in some cases days before burning the fields. Field burning significantly multiplies the known health risks of pesticides. The toxic chemical byproducts of pesticides that are incinerated or entrained in the field burning smoke, they pose an enormous risk of human health and environmental harm as a result of their chemical transformation during the process of combustion. Field stubble that is burned after many seasons of pesticide applications puts both nearby rural and downwind Oregonians at high risk of exposure to irritating vapors, nitrogen oxides, hydrogen chloride, phosgene gas, carbon monoxide, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, sulfur dioxide, and aldehydes. These toxic gases and chemical particles also contribute to the spread of dioxin on wind currents through particle dispersion. Dioxins amplify the health hazards of field burning because dioxins have been shown to bioaccumulate in humans and wildlife and are known to cause birth defects, act as mutagens, and are suspected human carcinogens. It is disingenuous for grass seed farmers to claim that they will be forced to use more pesticides if they can't burn. The truth is, according to DEQ, grass seed farmers already use the largest amount of pesticides in the Willamette Valley. Ending field burning would actually improve the situation of pesticide use because of the chlorinated compounds would not be incinerated and spread throughout the valley. Furthermore, ending one bad practice, burning, should not be used as an excuse to exacerbate another bad practice, pesticides. Economical, clean, non-thermal management of grass seed fields in Oregon is possible, and it is already practiced by the vast majority of grass seed farmers. The health hazards of continuing any field burning are far too great. It's time to make the transition from a program of managed field burning to its complete cessation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you all for coming here today. Okay, next up, we have Eric Bowers, Eric Pym, and then I cannot read this, so we'll figure this out, and Dave Nelson. Somebody with the name of first name of Brian, I guess, will be up eventually, but we couldn't read the last name. Starts with a G. Okay, so nobody else is here. Eric Bowers, Brick Pym, Eric Pym.
You got it. There's coming in from the other room.
Somebody, and then up soon will be somebody with a phone number 541-689-9344. I hope that's not your personal cell phone.
Call early, call often. We could just call them and tell them they're up now.
Yes, I think we'll do that. Can you give them a call? Okay, Mr. Nelson.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dave Nelson. I'm the former executive secretary of the Oregon Seed Council, a position I held, and have been involved in the seed industry and the field burning issue since Tom McCall stood on the Hill. Unfortunately, I was here 34 years ago.
That's the way it is in this building. The lobbyists are still here, and the legislators just turn over.
I think among the issues that have been talked about is has the seed industry made progress? In 1972, we burned 320,000 acres, and we're now down to 30,000 acres, and I think that does constitute progress. The question that Senator Przanski asked about, I guess there are a couple of comments I'd like to make before I talk about the thing I really wanted to talk about. One is the ambient air quality standards, and why are the monitors where they are? The monitors in Lyons and Sweet Home were put there, specifically to try to catch field burning smoke. They were put right in the pathway, and they are there to measure ambient air quality, not source air quality, but ambient air quality, and that's the standard, the EPA standard. It's the ambient air quality of the area. Secondly, on the asthma issue, I think Senator Beyer, former Senator Beyer, pointed out the asthma studies do not coincide. They would indicate an opposite indication that, and I have not heard that field-burning smoke has ever been a causal agent in asthma. Certainly, some people are aggravated by field-burning smoke particulate, but as a causative agent, I think there's probably more evidence now and more thought swinging around to indoor air quality as a source of asthma causal of relationships. What I really wanted to talk to you about is after the last legislative session, we began talking again with Lane County commissioners about why do we burn, what can we do, where do we go from here. And I've provided you with a chronology of where do we go from here, how can we further move towards a non-burning grass seed production model. And we landed upon the need for a feasibility study of generating electricity out of the agricultural waste from annual ryegrass. And so the seed industry, through field burning fees, funded a $250,000 feasibility study looking at the viability of that option. And basically, if you look at the summary of that study and go to the last page of that, the diagram, the flow chart, you'll see that we looked at cellulosic ethanol, anaerobic digestion, biodiesel production, and also pelletization and using those pellets in boilers. Well, there's not enough boilers in the state of Oregon to be able to look at that as a viable option. But you look then, you switch anaerobic digesters up to number one. Cellulosic ethanol is still in the developmental science stage. Whether it's enzymatic or whether it's other kind of processes to crack the hemicellulose fraction, you don't know. But you move anaerobic digestion up, you move cellulosic ethanol down, this project is ready to go, and we can create it, build the plant within a year, and start using annual ryegrass straw. We think that that market-driven solution is a much better approach than the hammer and sledgehammer time of legislation banning or otherwise manipulating the agricultural decision some way. So we would encourage you to support this kind of an approach. It would have, we think, a much faster turnaround time and a much greater benefit to the state of Oregon than simply hammering the grass seed industry.
Thank you, Dave. You're not Brian with the phone number, right?
My name's Eric Pym. I'm a seventh-generation farmer in Linn County, Shed and Halsey area. A lot of the points I wanted to make have already been brought up. But I would just say, this last 10% of the field burning that's being done these days is strictly for the reason that that is the management practice that works best with that ground. And it is a green practice, and I would appreciate it if you guys would vote down Bill 528. Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is Rick Pym. I am.
You guys related?
Yes, we're brothers, actually.
You looked like you didn't want to sit next to each other. I was figuring that out.
That's how you can tell they're brothers.
Right, that's what I figured.
Well, as is the case with my brother here, the other people in front of me really took a lot of the good points, and I thank them for their input on the issue. I just want to state that I am in opposition of this bill. For economic and environmental reasons, and that will be all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question.
For the pens, what type of grass seed are you growing and the type of soil that you're on?
Annual ryegrass, and it is mostly in the South Valley where it's very poorly drained soils.
Okay. Thank you.
White land is what we call it.
I'm sorry.
White land?
White land, okay.
Yep. Pretty heavy clay.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Hess?
Dave, the biopark still go forward if this bill passed, right? It could still go forward if this bill passed.
It could still go forward. It's nice to see you again, Senator Hess. It's been a couple of years. Yes, it would still go forward. We're in the seed industry put in $250,000 to initiate, do the feasibility study. They put in an additional $100,000 to begin doing the business plan. We raised another $150,000. Our business plan target is $350,000. We've got $100,000 to go to be able to take a business plan to the venture capital markets to say this is a logical plan. Here are all of the factors that you have to consider: wetlands mitigation, other kinds of mitigation, permitting, the whole thing for developing. We've got several sites identified. In fact, Madam Chair, we would very much like to make a presentation to the committee and urge your support of that business or of the energy park. We quit calling it a park. It's now a facility because the stimulus plan refuses to fund a park. So it's now a facility. So I didn't have time to change that in the language. But we would like to make a presentation on that if you would like to hear that.
Certainly, time allows. We will. We have a tight schedule, as you know, but we can see if we can find a minute or two in the next month.
Okay.
So any other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming out today on such a gorgeous day. All of us would rather be outside, that's for sure. Dave Fiskum. Sean Sweeney, Mary Grimes, am I saying that right? And we still are looking for the elusive Miss Brian G. 541-689-9344.
Call early. Call. We got a phone. Let's just call the guy.
Okay. Sean Sweeney or Mary Grimes, are you here? All right. They might have left as well.
Oh, we have another room, so
okay.
Some people are probably coming in.
Coming in. Okay. Why don't you get started, Dave?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, Dave Fiskum here representing Hewlett-Packard, including one of the company's major high-tech production facilities in Corvallis. It may seem odd for a technology company such as HP to be concerned about field burning, and if you would have asked me a few months ago if I'd be sitting here talking to you about this subject today, I probably would have said no, at least not likely. But I have something to add, perhaps, to your debate today. The fact is that field burns have caused serious and expensive ramifications for the company in Corvallis, and I have just been learning this in the last few weeks. Field burning under or near power lines in the vicinity of our plant causes the lines, the smoke causes the lines to short circuit and the voltage to, quote, sag, unquote, is the word used by the Corvallis plant managers in their conversations with me. In turn, this sag causes computers and computer-based industrial processing at our plant to fail. When we encounter a power sag, we have to go through the expensive process of resetting, consider it rebooting, our entire industrial process. In fact, in the last six seasons, field burning has led to five documented power sag incidents. And our estimate, obviously in round numbers, is that each of these has cost Hewlett-Packard $100,000, in other words, a total of $500,000 over these years. Those who run HP's facility in Corvallis have told me that the field burn power sags represent about one-third of Mid-Valley power failures that they experienced in the last few years, and are the fact leading cause in the last 6 years. I've got documented dates for those events as they have occurred. I should add that I've spoken to the seed growers and the Farm Bureau in the last number of days and understand that, in fact, some steps have been taken in cooperation with the State Department of Agriculture to try to control the bad burns that could cause power sags, and only one power sag has occurred in the last couple of years, according to the evidence from the facility in Corvallis. We appreciate those steps, maybe others to take to deal with this issue. Willing to work with you, Madam Chair, committee members, other legislators, to decide whether there's middle ground here that could work. On one hand, it's hard for me to think specifically in my naivete, perhaps, to this issue of what we would actually do except stopping field burning to stop the power sags that adversely affect Corvallis HP. At the same time, I've told my colleagues in the building that I'm willing to work with them. If you decide to move on this or similar legislation, I'm willing to work with you, Mr. Beyer, others, to figure out whether there is middle ground that would deal with our aspect of this issue. And, Madam Chair, my time is up, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Mary Grimes. Thank you for allowing me time to address the Senate Environmental and Natural Resource Committee about Senate Bill 528. and thermal field sanitation, also known as field burning. I'm Mary Grimes Grimes from a pioneer family in Harrisburg, located in Linn County. I am currently the, I have a bachelor's degree from Oregon State University in general agriculture with emphasis on soils, field crops, and equine reproduction. Currently, I'm the Women's Advisory Council Chair and the fourth Vice President of the Oregon Farm Bureau. For over 100-plus years, my family has been in the wheat or grass seed business in Harrisburg. I and my cousins are the fifth generation to farm the same soil and raise the same wheat and grass seed, although annual ryegrass is the main staple. We've tilled the soil, planted, fertilized, prudently applied pesticides when necessary, and used thermal field sanitation when needed to make our crops certifiable and keep our crop viable for marketing and meeting export standards. As you no doubt already know, Linn County is the seed capital, is the grass seed capital of the world, and we want to keep it that way. That is why it is so critically important that we do not have our tools taken away from us, as thermal field sanitation is the last resort to restoring the soils to rid pests and disease. It is the surefire way to protect our ability to continue in seed production, particularly in a time when tense economic conditions exist. So if we are not allowed to thermally sanitize our fields, we would have to make more passes over the fields with pesticide applications, which would mean more soil loss due to dust and eventually erosion. The environmental impact would be loss of air quality due to the dust and the emissions from the tractor. Then there's the economic impact to the grass seed farmer, the cost of more chemicals. Tillage costs $100 per acre. It is a vicious cycle. In 2008, grass seed farm gate sales in Linn County generated $145 million. Grass seed is the number one crop in Linn County, and without this crop, the tax base in Linn County would be decimated. We would be asking for a stimulus package from the state to fund the county shortfall. Personally, I do not feel we should even be having this conversation because of the economic hard times that we're in. Please rethink what you're asking the grass seed industry and the agriculture community.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today. Any questions, either of the panelists? Okay. Thank you very much. I wanted to know, sir, are you using HP computer?
Absolutely. Also got a T-Mobile telephone, and I go to Dildwin Resort, so thank you.
Thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Okay, Henry Peer, Donna Hippert, John Sundquist, I'm doing the best that I can with the handwriting, and Charlie Tibbett. It was a Mac?
It was a Mac.
I thought so. That's why I asked him.
I saw the Apple on it.
Chair Dingfelder, I'm Donna Hippert, and in the interest of time, I'm going to waive my oral testimony and submit written testimony.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And you, did you give it to Natalie? You'll make sure and do it. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So why don't you go first?
Thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair. My name is Henry Peer. I'm a farmer in Marion County. I'm here to give you my reasons to approve Senate Bill 528. First, I live adjacent to 130 acres of grass field and four other fields within half a mile radius. My wife is suffering from asthma, diabetes, and has a cardiac condition. Every summer, her health gets worse as a result of the grass field burnings. My friend Frank Hamill, for the past 8 years, is also suffering from the field burnings. He has respiratory problems, and 2 weeks ago, he underwent a four-bypass open-heart surgery and doesn't know how worse his medical conditions will get this year as a result of the field burning air pollution. Second, it is not true that the farmers would lose profit if they don't burn their grass fields. In fact, the published revenues of farmers who used to burn their grass fields in the state of Washington has increased compared to when they practiced field burnings in the past. Mr. Stephen Van Maverick, who happened to be a member of the board of directors for the Department of Agriculture, states that his company is making $100 million per year by selling hay and straw residues that used to get burned to the Asian beef farmers. Third, my wife's health as well as others are in danger. The Jason farmer burned my property and my cropland has been damaged as a result of soil and water erosion by another farmer. I'm a victim of irresponsible policies of the Department of Agriculture. The agency in charge of the environmental issues, such as air, water, and soil, must be an impartial state agency like the DEQ and not the Department of Agriculture. No one should be above the laws, including and not limited to the farmers, especially when the general concern and public health is involved. I urge you to approve Senate Bill 528 for the sake of Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you for coming here and testifying today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is John Sundquist. I'm a Lane County farmer and timberland owner, and I've lived 5 miles north of Coburg, surrounded by grass seed fields, since 1983. I speak as the parent of a child who suffered for too many years from needless field-burning smoke. I was told that if the pesticide drift or field-burning smoke harmed my family, there was nothing I could do about it because of the liability exclusions of the Right to Farm and Forest Acts. The liability exclusions that were added to Right and Forest, the RITFAs, in the 1990s were part of a nationwide effort by the fertilizer, pesticide, and feedlot industries. These exclusions deny an Oregonian's constitutional right, Article 1, Section 10, to redress for injury caused by nuisance and trespass. Agriculture and forestry are the only industries exempted. Citizens can't sue for harm from smoke damage because the grass seed industry is supposed to be providing some unknown benefit to society. The right to farm laws are now the right to poison laws. I found my county government could not protect my children from pesticide drift or field-burning smoke to any greater degree than the right to poison laws because of another set of Oregon laws known as the preemption laws. The liability exclusions and the preemption laws are collectively known as the poison protection laws. Liability-free protections add up to government-encouraged poisoning. This committee cannot deal with the damage to people and the environment done by the poison protection laws, but it can end field burning this year. Field burning smoke contains soot and particulate matter and also the other byproducts of low temperature pesticide pyrolysis, including dioxins and phosgene gas. These additional health threats are shown in the Oregon Toxics Alliance report that you were just given by David Monk. Madam Chair, committee members, I ask you to protect the health of all Oregon citizens by supporting SB 528. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Charlie Tebbett. I am co-director of the Campaign to End Field Burning and an attorney with the Western Environmental Law Center. To address a number of issues that have arisen today, first the issue of why the change from ODA to DEQ. We believe it's because ODA has an inherent conflict of interest. Their mission is to promote agriculture. DEQ's is supposedly to protect public health and the environment. We now applaud DEQ for now stepping up to the plate, along with DHS and the governor's office, recognizing the public health threat caused by field burning. With regard to the average air quality standards that Mr. Nelson and Mr. Beyer talked about earlier, the national ambient air quality standards are set on practicality levels, not on medical science levels. If they were set on medical science levels, it would be zero, because the medical information shows that there's a linear relationship between the increase in particulate matter and the effects of heart attack, stroke, and respiratory conditions. It's unequivocal. I'd also like to point out that Mr. Byers' submissions to you pick and choose excerpts of reports that if you look at the whole of the reports, you will see those excerpts don't tell the whole story. Another issue is that there is a chart on page 12 of the report that Maya Leonard Kahn is the principal author of, showing increases, average increases of particulates on all burn days on levels that cause, as we've shown in the medical literature, significant health impacts. Linn County has the highest asthma rate in the area of about 11.5%. Oregon is above the national average. We've heard in the last 2 days a number of the farmers testify that they have asthma. And in fact, it appears that the farmers are at about 7 times the national, even Linn County rate, and perhaps 8 times the national rate for asthma. With regard to the Lebanon Hospital letter, if you take a close look at it, they didn't say that smoke didn't enter the hospital, only that there were no patient complaints. And they have particulate filters to try to keep the particulates out because of field burning. We heard a little nice anecdote about campfires. If you sit around the campfire, you don't sit. You move when the smoke comes right in your face. You don't sit in it. You move to the other side. I spoke with a farmer today, Dan Thackaberry, who says he hasn't burned in 12 years and has used no more pesticides on his fields. We don't need more air monitoring or other studies. We need to stop the smoke. The best available technology is to return the straw to the soil. Passing this bill will drive the alternatives, not stop them. As Mr. Bauer said earlier, pulling the plug is the right solution to emptying the tub. Pulling the plug on field burning is the right answer to this situation. We ask you to pass SB 528 as it stands without amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen? Thank you very much for your testimony today. And anybody else, that's all the signed testimony we have. Anybody else who would like to testify that did not sign up in either this room or the other room? I guess the elusive Brian we never found.
Wait 15 seconds.
Yeah, I'm going to wait a few minutes in case there's anybody in the overflow room that would like to testify. And in the meantime, I just would like to thank everybody on, obviously, both sides of this issue are very passionate about what we've heard today, and we really appreciate folks who have come, especially from far away, to hear your stories and your testimony. And I think there's a couple of comments from the dais up here. Senator Prezanski.
Madam Chair, thank you. I also want to thank everyone that's come in. This has been extremely civil, very fact-informative. As everyone has recognized, you know, this is an issue that we will have to deal with. But I want to thank each and every one of you for being participants today, getting us the information. I know there will be additional information. And as the Chair says, the record is open until 5 p.m. on Monday. So if you have other things that need to be stated or other type of documentation you'd like to file with us, please do so before that time. And again, thank you for your participation.
Okay. Any last comments? Right, with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 528, and I will close the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources.